Welcome to this episode of DebtWired. I'm Adam Samoon, Head of High Yield at DebtWire Europe. I'm pleased to be joined on this episode by Clark Nichols of Orsett Investment Management. This podcast will focus on opportunities in European high yield. We will explore why the asset class is attractive, which rated credits are most interesting, and what sectors offer the best trade opportunities. Clark, thanks for joining us today. Welcome. Why is the European high yield market attractive currently?
Hi, Adam, and thank you for the invitation. My pleasure to be here. In my opinion, there's, I guess, a long-term and a short-term basis you could look at the high yield market. On the short term, and I would say this in the sense of, you know, in months and, you know, even up to a year short term versus long term, which is more structural. But in the short term, we've had some volatility recently. Trump has come through with some quite dynamic and variable policies, and the market has gone a little bit wider. So in that context, we've been getting very good returns the last month or two. But also since the last couple of years, actually, we've had very good returns. If you think back to 2022, there was an interest rate rise. The Bund, for instance, was at minus 50 basis points, moving up to 3.5% within a few months. And the market was very weak for a period of time. Not as weak as investment grade or equities, but certainly there were some losses. And since then, actually, we had very good returns through 23 and 24. To the point that last year, depending on which measures you use, some indexes, for instance, for European high yield, had consecutive months, all 12 months, positive, cumulatively about 8.5% return. So that's on the short term. And on a structural basis, if you look at why it's an interesting market, and this is the one that I think long-term investors really should look at, there's a number of reasons. Firstly, even though there is a bit more volatility at the single name basis, you know, there's many strategies. One is obviously taking a portfolio approach where you're blending a number of names. In that context, you get the, you know, one of the last free lunches in terms of performance, where you're getting better yields, albeit with some higher single name volatility. But when you aggregate it to a portfolio, obviously you get a lot more defensive nature of the returns. There's other bits and pieces where you can reduce your risk with a high yield asset class, which is giving you higher yields, let's say. That is if you do, you know, thorough due diligence. For me particularly, I actually invest in the shorter end of the typical maturity. So in that sense, if the market goes hypothetically wider 5%, if you're owning a five-year bond, you'll lose 25 points on your principal because it's 5% each year. But if you're only having one-year maturity, you only lose 5%. So in that context, it's far more defensive if you hold short duration. And I've done a lot of work on that to the point of, if you look at a risk-return basis, it's actually one of the best performing asset classes out of, you know, all fixed income, and to be honest, even equity assets, in that you get a good risk-return basis. And then there's a final other couple of things. The technicals are still quite supportive for high yield. There's been a lot of rising stars, they're called, where a double B name improving its credit profile has gone to a triple B. And also there's been a private debt market growth, and they've picked up a lot of their underperforming, often mezzanine, sort of weaker credits. So for instance, for Europe in high yield, the proportion that are double Bs has grown and is about 70% of the index now. So in that context, again, it's relatively defensive. Some of the weaker names have been taken off to a different asset class. Some of the better names have moved out. But because the actual asset class has shrunk a little bit, it's been about 100 billion smaller over about the last 4 or 5 years, whilst still the same amount of capital is there, yeah, it has driven performances, again, from the product. So those are some aspects. I mean, I don't think it's all perfect. I mean, one good example is it's still a bit more inefficient. So if you're a new manager, like you haven't been operating in this market for a long time, you have, for instance, over-the-counter trading, you don't have any public index or registration of trade. So you have to have quite a reasonable amount of scale and good familiarity with the market. Another example where, again, you know, that the best managers actually perform better from these market inefficiencies, but they are market inefficiencies, is there's regular new issuance. The average age of a bond sits at about 3.5 years. So every 3 or 4 years, you'll typically refinance even an existing seasoned credit. And with that in mind, if you are very good at assessing new issues, often you go what's called over the wall, where you're taken private on a company for a couple of weeks before it's brought to market. You give good advice to the company. This way you can get very good allocations, but also very good insight to the company. So that inefficiency, if you're one of the better managers, is actually a driver of performance.
JP Morgan European currency high yield indices have roughly 4.5% yields for double Bs, 6.5% yields for single Bs, and 14.3% for triple Cs and split triple Cs. Where are the most compelling opportunities, Clark?
Good question. And what I would say is, If I look historically, just between the rating notches, like a double B versus a single B versus a triple C, interestingly enough, ever since 2022, where there was that widening in the market, both the single and double Bs have tightened substantially, or broadly speaking, have outperformed, given very good returns. And in that context, they trade what we call tight. There's less outperformance, and I'll get into that. But relatively speaking, actually, the triple Cs have remained at quite wide spreads. In other words, they're actually relative to your single B and your double B at historic wide spreads, as they were, for instance, in the 2008-2009 crisis. So it's a real opportunity, actually. The triple Cs, I believe. But I would say there, you have to be quite selective and do your diligence. So again, a good manager will drive performance by doing that credit work, whilst if you're not well into the market, as one would say, yeah, that could be quite challenging. So that's one element of opportunity. I would say, though, as an example, with that volatility in the market, most spaces currently have performed very well in the last month, but over the long term, they are trading relatively tight. And when I say that, if you look at how wide they're trading, this is like a cheap or rich, they're trading at about one standard deviation rich. In other words, versus historical standards, they're about 66% of the time product has been cheaper, 34% of the time it's been more expensive. But if you compare that to the US, it was actually 95% of the time cheaper and only 5% of the time more expensive. So in other words, relative to the US, actually it's been quite cheap.
The European High Yield Index is broad. What sectors and investment themes make sense to consider currently?
That's a broad topic, and obviously I think we're going to have a whole discussion just on that. But I would suggest there's two, again, ways to look at this. One is if the fundamentals are improving, but also where the value is, often because of historical issues. I'll start where the value might be and use some examples too. So probably 2 years ago, there was a large operator that had a large default in the real estate sector. And then numerous other businesses that were really, again, same real estate sector, replicating that business model, were fairly stretched and stressed. So in that context, last year, after that one default and they traded very wide, there was a lot more conservative management, there was a lot more portfolio improvement, a lot more conservative balance sheet approaches. And what that all meant was they performed very well last year. They were the sort of the widest sector 2 years ago, and not surprisingly, came in to be maybe not the widest, but certainly two-thirds wide to the average, but still significant outperformance. And then more recently, there's been other sectors where people have been quite negative. And if you can take a contrarian view and get it right in terms of the turnaround, there's quite meaningful performance. Interestingly enough, with the EV change as an example, there's a lot of negative views and sentiment towards that sector. Yet they've been quite conservative, again, in their balance sheet. There's many a company, not just the automakers, but into the high yield space where there's auto suppliers, often there's less value add in those businesses, and so they are a bit more stretched, but they've actually performed relatively well. So if you can choose your credits carefully, you can actually, again, get good outperformance. So it is being contrarian often versus the market. There is other ways you can look at the market. One is being defensive versus cyclical. Interestingly enough, the best performing sectors out of those two actually has been the cyclical year to date, whereas everyone's still very much trying to avoid those sector. All I could say is you really have to look at the single name basis. Sometimes there's secular changes and we recognize those. I mean, a good example is defense and infrastructure. There's a lot of investment through Europe government-led initiatives, and those are great opportunities. But broadly speaking, it is coming down that single name basis.
Clark, thanks for sharing your views with us today. To the audience, thanks for listening to DebtWired. I'm Adam Samoon. You can download or listen to more episodes of DebtWired on Apple or Spotify.